Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and if you'd like to join us, this is a car show for the next 2 hours. What we do is you're welcome to call in, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when you call in, you tell us your make and model of the car, and then we talk about symptoms. That's kind of important, is symptoms. It's difficult for us to comment about guys on the internet or, you know, the guys that do podcasts and stuff like that. We have the opportunity to talk to you. And so we can ask you, does it make any difference when it's hot and cold and stuff like that? Sitting next to me, flying wing for me today, is Tom O'Kane from Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley. I've told you before where somebody took me out snowmobiling in Wisconsin. Was it Wisconsin?
That's what it was.
Yeah. And they left me on a lake, and I lost them. They were doing like 150 miles an hour. Wasn't that it?
Well, the slow guy pretty much stays behind.
And it would have been okay had I could pick your taillights out. I think you should put a blue taillight in the back of your sleds.
Well, so we have a cell phone.
You have a cell phone?
Yeah, so you can call when you need us.
How are you going to find me if there's how many sleds are on the lake?
Oh, they're all over the place.
Yeah. How are you going to find me?
You'll be in the corner crying.
Oh, it wasn't cold. The cold didn't bother me.
No.
I think it was you ride for a long time, and then you go to a bar, and then you see all your friends, and you
sit by the fire.
And you sit by the fire, and you have to take all your stuff off, and then you go outside, and you have to get dressed again.
Yeah.
And then you just go to the next place.
The technology in apparel has come a long way.
So yeah.
Instead of taking 30 minutes, it only takes 15 to get dressed.
I never got wet. That was nice. I never got wet. My hands never got cold. There was a couple of times I knew that I hadn't pulled my mask down over my neck, but there wasn't really an opportunity for me to fix that.
Yeah, well, you learn.
Yeah. Yeah, you bet I learned. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Our industry is just like everybody else's. You see them closed up all around us.
Yeah, it's slowing down. Slowing down.
But, I mean, even some of our vendors, some of the car dealers, some of the chain stores, there's a lot of people in the auto repair industry that are just cutting back.
Yep, changing their hours, limiting. Yep.
Yep.
And we're seeing that.
Tell me what you guys did.
We're going as normal.
Okay. All right.
You know, certainly we keep things just as clean as it always has been, but we're a little bit more conscientious on that.
Yeah.
We haven't changed.
Okay.
We're still there. We're still working. The guys are relatively happy, but we're still going.
Yeah. We went from 6 to 5, and then on Fridays we went to 4 o'clock. We're off on Saturdays and Sundays anyway. We're not taking appointments. We're just going, walk in. It's okay. We'll take you on a walk-in. We're either taking them home in our shuttle bus, or we're calling Uber and have them take them home. We've only got two. Instead of seating 10 in our lobby, we only have two or three chairs.
Yeah.
So we're trying to move like you guys do. We got a lot of gloves, but face masks are hard to find. We've got enough toilet paper to last us for a while.
Yeah, well, we did the same thing with the hand sanitizer. We bought that, you know, 5 months ago, and thank God it's working good for us now.
Yeah, and the reason I asked you about hand sanitizer a little while ago is because Andy set two bottles on my desk, and she said if Tom needs any hand sanitizers, then these are like $11. And so I'm glad you
had
some.
You're always selling, aren't you?
You know what? I asked her. I said, how much do these cost? And she goes, $20 a piece. And I said, so why are you selling for $11? She says, because we're all partners in this. And I said, okay, well, don't sell any cars at half price.
There you go.
So, yeah, masks. It's hard to find masks. I was in Home Depot the other day. The place is packed. They're not controlling. But that's okay with me.
Well, people are bored. They have to get out of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. A Walmart up in Payson. You know, they have senior days one morning at a time, and they've hired all kinds of new people because they have trucks in there virtually two or three times a day, but it's all gone. It's all gone. And I don't understand the toilet paper thing, but it doesn't really make any difference.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Had any cars just eat your lunch lately?
Actually, no. Things are going very well. You know, we had another one of those Chevys with the lifter issues this past week, and I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but
is that the lifter camshaft?
Correct.
Yeah.
The cylinder cancel.
Yeah. Yeah. We've seen a lot of those, and there's no fix for it. Nobody.
Well, there is a fix. It's
whether or not it works.
Yeah, it's take the engine apart, put the new components in, and tell them to change your oil a little more often.
Yeah. I think the hard part is sliding the cam out the front, because everything from in front of it has to come off.
Well, the cylinder heads come off.
Okay, so you guys are doing the cylinder head, so you can do the lifters.
Yeah.
So that must be the GM 6 liter or 5?
6.2 or something.
6.2?
Yeah.
Okay. Folks, what we're talking about is the camshaft has lobes on it, and the lobes push on the lifter, and the lifter pushes on the push rod, and that rocks the valve open and closed. So what's happening is the lifter and the camshaft don't like one another. So we're just wearing the camshaft down to where there's no bump on it, and that creates a cylinder misfire, and then we end up with a cylinder coat. But really and truly, when those cars come in, we don't need to put a scanner on them.
Well, these are the cylinder canceling Chevys, the 8468, and if you remember the old 1979 Cadillac.
Eldorados and stuff.
Yeah, well, now they got the new system, which they control the lifters through oil pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And by controlling the oil to the lifters, they can collapse that lifter and stop the valve from working, which stops the cylinder from working, which saves you fuel economy driving down the road.
And
the other side of it is, how much does it cost to fix that engine?
Yeah.
So you lost all your fuel savings after the first time you had to fix your engine.
That's true. But we kind of know when they come in, just by driving them and stuff, getting them up, getting the load off of them, getting up at 45, 50 miles an hour, that miss is still there no matter what. We can't get it in to go into, even downhill.
Right. Well,
we're having a tough time with that.
But you hear them because they're clacking away because the lifters are collapsed.
There's a noise associated. Clack, clack. Yeah. But there's a lot of pattern failures. You can talk about Fords and Chryslers and all kinds of cars.
And it's always been, we like to talk about the Fords.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yep. And now we got a Chevy.
Yeah.
Hurts.
Well, I mean, there's lots of them out there. There's the little four cylinders that are really fuel economy. You can't afford to overheat those. We're doing heads on a lot of those.
Yep.
And even in this time of the year, we're seeing overheats. I mean, crispy overheats. This is, folks, it's not a good idea to have the needle in the red and you think that another 2 miles to home is okay. The tow bill is going to be cheap compared to what the engine repair is going to be. So it's the best thing to do is I think 3/4, 7/8, as long as the needle's not in the red, I think I'm okay. But if the needle's buried to the red and there's steam coming out from underneath the hood and stuff like that, usually you're in trouble.
Yeah, it's a little too late at that point.
Yeah. Okay, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
That'd be Fred.
Fred, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Speaking of oil.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got a nice 2019 GMC pickup, and they're telling me I need another oil change at 11,500 miles, but the dash says I got 22% left on it. What do I do? Who do I believe?
I would believe changing the oil before 11,000 miles.
It'd be the second change.
All right, so that's 6,000 almost.
Right.
I think you should be changing the oil at 5,000 to be safe.
Okay.
I mean, you're using synthetic oil.
It's a 0/20.
Yeah. Use a good quality, known component product, and you'll be good.
So their readout on the dash when it says 22%, they're lying. They want me to get a new engine real quick, right?
Well, you know, let me talk about BMW. If you remember, BMWs used to run their oil changes at every 20,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an advertising thing that they would do and tell people, come buy a BMW, you don't have to change the oil for 20,000 miles. They cost so little to maintain. And then when the car's out of warranty, you need to buy an engine because you're not changing the oil enough.
Oil's cheap, I'll do it.
Okay, there's two sides to that story, though. There's only four companies that make oil. Okay, Chevron, Mobil, and I always mess it up, Exxon, and
the Bay Stocks. AMSOIL.
No. I just came back from a class. There's only four. They make oil. It's in different cans. There's no such thing as a Motorcraft oil. There's no such thing as an AMSOIL. It all comes from one of these four refiners. Nevertheless, the 0/20 is a superior oil to anything that we've ever seen. And it's, remember when Mobil 1 came out and they said 25,000 miles? Well, that trashed a bunch of motors. We weren't ready for that.
And they're coming back with those extended.
Right. There's a lot of cars out there right now with 18 to 20,000 miles because the synthetic will go that long. It has lubricity. It has all the wear. It has all the shear. It has all those additives. And they are going that long. But the exception is the short-term drivers. They don't ever heat up the oil. They don't get the water out of the oil. Nobody takes it on the freeway. They just drive from their house to your house and back. Those are the big deals. But conventional oil is 3 to 5,000. They've moved that up because that was 3,000. Then semi-synthetic, depending on the blend, is between 3 to 5, 5 to 7,500. And you can look at some of the new cars. The Benz in some of those cars, they're at 15 to 20,000 miles. The problem with that is 20,000 miles on most cars is more than a year. Right. And so they've gone through four seasons, and you don't know if we got all the
condensation.
Exactly.
Right.
And now we've got cars that are running 220, and people are a little worried. They want us to put the 180 thermostat in there. But the problem is that we need the oil to get up 212 to get the moisture out. So we've got people. All right, here, ladies in Ahwatukee, they drive 3,000 miles a year.
1 minute.
I'm putting conventional oil in their car. They write 7,500 miles or a little less. I'm putting semi-synthetic. Then I got some salesmen out there that are doing 15 or 20, and it's not an oil burner or an oil leaker. I got them in synthetic. And so it's really matching the car to the oil. But this class, they talked about oxidation. They talked about pour point. They talked about its ability to when it burns up and when it turns to a solid. And they talked about everything else. There is just no such thing as a Valvoline well that they make oil. They don't.
Well, it all comes out of the ground.
Oh, no, you're right. But they don't. Bringing it out of the ground is one step of 10. So they take it all the way to 10, but it's purchased in oils with no, in barrels with no nothing. And so at that particular point, they can sell it to anybody they want. There's a lot of guys right now, because of oil pricing, that they've got Motorcraft tanks, but that's not one in them.
But now, let's just use the Motorcraft situation. Do they not go in and add their own additive, similar to what a fuel supplier like Shell or Mobil, they throw their additive in with the fuel before they sell it?
Fuel's different. I'm going to go with you on the fuel.
But I think that with the oil, it's the same situation.
No.
You know, if a Mobil 1 is not the same oil as a Master Tech oil brand that you would buy at the bargain.
It's exactly the same, and here's why. If anybody puts additive in it, they knock it out of spec. So that's why you can't add anything to the newer models, is because you're going to throw it out of spec. And once it's out of spec, then it's not going to do what it's supposed to do. And you got lifters and all these pistons and all that other stuff. It's the same thing. Chevron's oil is Chevron. That's one of the places that build it. But they use the example of Motorcraft and a lot of the others. The AMSOIL is just a remake of a synthetic oil. And here's the problem. They have the ability to test it. And so if they look at it and they go, okay, here's the pour point, here's the oxidation point, here's the lubricity. Oh, yeah, well, that's so-and-so. So the guys that make it know where it came from. But there's just, we have 21 brands of oil at the local O'Reilly store and AutoZone and stuff like that. There's not that many wells and there's not that many refineries. So even in Europe, they have two or three that just do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. It's the only shop in Mesa that I can really recommend. There's good shops in Mesa, but we have a pretty tight filter. And it has a lot to do with how long you've been in business and whether the owner's on site and what your ratings are, what your Better Business record is and stuff like that. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's is on Main Street just east of Stapley. And Thompson's, Thelma and... I always forget his doggone name. Brian. Brian and Thelma, they're married, but both of them come from gas station people that go back to the late 60s. So it's been a family that's been for doing repairs and selling gas for a very long time. So that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Fred had a question that we stumbled and we kicked him off. So, Fred, we're ready.
Okay, I'm on kick. Thank you. So you said oil. I didn't give all the particulars. GMC, Canyon, Bought it in July of last year, 11,500 miles roughly, and I, on occasion, pull my 3,000-pound RV trailer. So what kind, and if you can tell me on or off air, but where do I go? I'm about a mile away from the MIM.
Let's pretend you're my dad or my brother. I wouldn't care as long
as it's your son.
Yeah. It's you go anywhere. Look at the, every one of them has an API sticker on it. It doesn't really make a difference to the brand. We poured Valvoline for 30 years, and then we just recently in the last 3 years switched to Chevron. It has everything to do with bulk sales. I've got six 200-gallon tanks. And I can buy it a little cheaper than the guy that buys it in quarts. So I wouldn't care. When you pull your trailer, you reach a heat range in that engine that you don't otherwise hit. And too much heat is bad, but when you boil all the water out of the motor oil, that's the best thing. So I haul horse trailers, and the 1540 in the diesel is a blended oil, but the 540 is a synthetic, and I'm going 10,000 miles on my oil change, and I haul horses and tractors all the time. So
okay,
I don't think you have any problems.
I'm confused because the dealer says 6,000, and you said it was closer to that, and like I said, on the engine readout on the dash, it says, 22% left.
Okay.
Obviously,
okay, we're going to change the subject, and so that
sure.
Your question to me is do you care about the readout, Mark? And I'm going to tell you, I could care less about the readout.
Fine. Okay.
The readout.
They want to sell me a new truck.
Yeah. Well, and then there are a lot of shops in the valley that will look. It's a matter of business here. We're all down in business. We used to have a shot at you every 3,000 miles. You bring it in, and we got to rotate your tires and your coolant system flush and service your battery and check. We don't do that anymore. We've lost a lot of business now that everybody's moved to 6, 10, and 15,000-mile oil changes. So so it's really kind of self-serving for somebody to tell you with a 020 written on the oil cap to bring it in every 6,000 miles. Okay? If I caught my staff doing that, we'd be one less person. So,
okay.
All righty? Okay.
All righty. Good enough.
All right.
Tell
thank you, Fred.
Tell me what your address is.
Well, just tell me where you live, and I'll send you to a really good shop.
Okay. About a mile south of the MIM, Musical Instrument Museum, 101 in Tatum.
Oh, that'd be Tom Blackwell.
Yeah, Blackwell, 40th Street in Glendale. Or 40th Street in Greenway. 40th Street in Greenway,
okay,
Blackwell
yeah.
Automotive. And telling Mark Salem said he wouldn't know which end of the car the exhaust comes out, and he'll know that I sent you. But there's no discount associated with that, but at least he'll know that I sent you. Okay? Okay. Thank you, Chris. Or thank you, Fred. Let's go to Chris. Chris, good morning.
Hey, guys. How's it going? I got a three-part problem trying to get one answer.
All right.
When it's hot and I park my car in the sun, the driver's side door doesn't open automatically. I have to use the key. Now I'm having trouble with my rear hatch. It won't open. It's a manual, not an automatic. It is a manual. So I have to climb in and flip the little switch inside to open the door. No big deal, but I'm 60 years old. My friend tracked it down, and he says it's the passenger side door lock because a lot of stuff runs from the battery through the passenger side door lock to the hatch. Should I throw a switch in there for $50?
Well, first of all, somebody should test it. And
yes,
when they test it,
he was only getting 10 volts.
How about amperage? What was he getting on the amperage?
10
amps? 10 volts?
10 out of 12, yeah.
Well, yeah, if it's yeah. 10 amps, then...
You're blowing fuses.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. It's 10 volts, he said. I don't know what the amperage is.
Well,
okay.
See, but that's what you have to be testing. We've Got ran it. Across this with a Chevy truck years ago, and I'm talking over 15 years ago. And the actuators get bad, and it would sit in the sunlight, and it would heat up, and then when you go hit it, it would draw an excessive amount of amperage, which would not allow the rest of the system to function.
Gotcha.
But the correct thing to do is to have somebody run some tests.
Check the amperage. And okay.
We don't guess. You know, we just don't throw parts in it just for fun.
Right.
It's
2 minutes.
Well, having 10 volts to a circuit when the battery is supposed to be at least 12 and when it's running it's 13.4, 13.6, I'm a little uncomfortable with the idea that there's 10 volts in a circuit. Because if you had 10 volts, then I would expect you to say, I have to jump my car every once in a while or pretty often. That voltage is unacceptable. So the bottom line is that I agree with Tom. You can guess, and if you can get it, I don't know, are you getting a door switch or a door activator for $50?
Oh, no. That would be the rear hatch lock. They're like $42 for the same one on Amazon. Actuators are $200 for the passenger and $180 for a driver's side.
If you want to guess, it's no problem. The idea is there's guys out there that are going to tell you what's wrong with your car. The problem is Tom and I are unable to tell you what's wrong with your car, and together we have more than 50, 60 years of experience. So if you could come to us and say this activator draws 30 amps and this activator draws 10, that tells us something. So that's kind of the need we stop. Okay, thank you. And please, Corky and Hector and Tom, please stay there because when we come back, we're going to take you. I've got Tom from Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. Him and I have been friends since 1983. Back then, he was selling those big box scopes that everybody said, will you put my car on the scope?
Yeah, all the light bulbs.
And all the. So there was two kinds of scope, an Allen and a Bear. And he was selling the Allen, and I was looking for one. And if I remember correctly, I paid as much for that as I did my first house. They were $20,000.
$25,
because I think we paid $33. So when you look at the big picture, we don't have those no more. But I just threw my last one away.
Right.
So anyway, Corky, Hector, and Tom, you stay right there. We promise we're going to get right back to you. This is KKNT 960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour o'clock, after the hour of 10 o'clock. Sitting next to me is Tom from Action Auto, Deer Valley, and I-17, northwest corner. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to go pick up the callers like we said. Corky, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Good show you guys got. Love it.
Thank you.
Here's my problem. I have a 1998 Jeep Wrangler 4-liter 5-speed, and I've called you before on this, but it's been a long time ago. Basically, what's happening is on the freeway, I'm driving 55 or 60, whether the fuel tank's quarter tank or three-quarters tank. At some point in time, it starts to break down, and it just sputters and spits, and I pull it off to the side and just sit there for a little while, and I can go ahead then and put it in gear and get off the highway.
Okay. And go ahead, take it there, Tom.
Sounds like something's heating up.
And it's fuel starvation. Clearly, it's a fuel starvation.
Well, I think that needs to be tested.
Yeah.
On the other side of it, it could also be ignition.
Okay.
You know, on those 4 liters, we see a lot of things, and we always have what's called pattern failures. You know, on that 4-liter Jeep that has an ignition coil that hangs down there on the side of the engine, and certainly we've tested those, and those had failed at times, and there's a crankshaft position sensor that sits off the back on the engine, and that's another item that needs to be tested. And typically we put them on an oscilloscope and make sure they're hot when we do it.
Now, is it 55 and 60? It has this problem. What about at 35 and 40?
Nope, no problem at all.
So it does sound like it's fuel.
Yeah. And I don't know how many Fords we've bypassed the fuel or the fuel pump relay. They burn up in the fuse panel. You can see them. And they have a kit to remote it now. So I don't know where it picks up its power. It could be from an oil pressure switch. I'm just guessing some of the cars have that. There could be a relay. And you said it didn't make any difference where the fuel level is, so that might suggest that it's not the pump, because if it's full of fuel, then it's lubricated and cooled by the fuel. We get lots of college students that run off the bottom eighth of their tanks, and we do lots of fuel pump because the fuel pump's out there in the sun. So in your case, there's a fuel pressure regulator on the Wrangler.
Yes.
We could pull the vacuum line on the fuel pressure regulator and plug it. And then we're going to jack the pressure up a lot. And then the question is how does it do at 45 to 50 to 60 after that? That's part of the testing. Then we can also put a Banjo fitting on it or a Schrader fitting, and we can drive down the road and we're looking at fuel pressure. So if you say that we're going to take it 55 to 60 miles an hour, then we're going to take it in the afternoon when it's warmer, and we're just going to put a tech in there, and we're going to tape the fuel pressure regulator.
Yeah, what you're trying to do is we're trying to isolate between the fuel system and the ignition system. And I'm saying on that particular 4-liter Jeep, it can be neither one of those.
But doesn't most of the time when you have an ignition failure, it doesn't restart for a while?
That's what he's saying.
No, if I start the Jeep in the morning, it cranks maybe a second and a half and is running. If I drive it down the road, 5 miles, park it, come back out, it's going to crank 5 to 6 seconds before it starts.
Okay. Well, try this. Cycle the key on, count to five, turn it off. Cycle the key when you have the problem. Cycle the key on, turn it off. And sometimes that will prime the pump. And then if you say, oh, it's better. But I want to tell you something. If it were mine and it cranks over 3 seconds or 2 seconds versus 4 seconds, I'm not going to spend a lot of money. But it runs out of fuel. Or when it runs bad and runs out of power at 55 to 60, then, yeah, I'm going to chase that. But I'm not going to use the it's a couple of seconds difference from one crank to the other because I think you're going to spin your wheels. I think we go in for the other one, and it'll probably fix the first one. What's the diagnostic?
Right.
What's the diagnostic?
I looked up on the...
Go ahead.
I looked up, on a fuel pressure regulator, on the YouTube, and it shows it. But they're not always... They don't always have them on top of the fuel bank. They said it's part of the pump or something. I couldn't find one.
What year was it? 98, you said?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's going to be up on the fuel rail under the hood. You can certainly pull the vacuum... You can pull the vacuum hose off of that and put a vacuum T in that hose, which eliminates the vacuum from lowering the pressure.
You can also look inside the fuel or the vacuum line and see if it's wet with gas. That's a good solid indicator.
You can also get yourself a can of carburetor spray, and when the problem occurs, give it a little extra fuel and see if it's gone.
You can do that by running the 3-foot piece of windshield wiper hose T into one of the vacuum lines, and you're going down the road and you get a can of carb spray, and all of a sudden you start just spraying it down the tube, and there's a significant difference in how it runs or how it doesn't run. But those are the testings that we do. We do a fuel pressure test.
Right.
We check the regulator out.
Check the delivery.
Check the delivery, and then probably just go drive it and watch the fuel pressure. That would be that's the first thing we'd probably do. Well, good luck, Corky. That's a 98.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the old school.
It's the old school. It doesn't have any, it's not an electronic fuel pressure regulator or anything like that. Hector, how are you? What can we do for you?
Morning. I have an 01 Nissan Sentra. I was driving down the road. I almost got to a light, and then the car just died. I tried to restart it, but nothing happened. Like, the battery was dead. I pushed it over the side, popped the hood. I saw that the negative cable was almost completely off. Put it back on, tried to start the car. It would start, but once it idles, it just dies. So I got it home, changed the spark plug, PCB valve, took off the throttle body, cleaned that out, changed the TPS and the idle control valve, and cleaned the mass flow air sensor, and put it all back together. Same thing. I could get it to like 2,000 RPMs and keep it there, but once I let it idle, it dies. So then but still no check engine light whatsoever. But
Okay. You have spent three times as much money as somebody would have charged you in guessing. Mass airflow? We're talking idle air control motor? We're talking all of this stuff that...
Gosh darn.
And the answer is we can't fix your problem for you.
Wait a minute. Now,
okay.
There's only
got to
be one or two pieces.
My wife said that too.
Hey, did you replace the EGR valve?
The EGR valve. No, I did not.
Okay. Well, let me explain something to you. Your Sentra wasn't born yesterday, and the EGR valve is supposed to open when you start throttling up, and it's supposed to close when you come to an idle. And if it doesn't close when you come to an idle, then it's going to have a really rough idle and probably going to die because we got this mixture that's all of a sudden a hell of a lot more air than fuel. So what guys like we do is you come in and we put a golf tee in the vacuum line of the EGR and we tell you to go drive it for a couple of days and you come back and say, yeah, everything's fine now. We pop the EGR valve, try to clean it sometimes, but if not, we'll replace it. But really and truly, you have spent so much money. And frankly, this kind of a repair or testing, what we don't want is we don't want Hector to say, well, I already got that. So a lot of times, not at my shop or Tom's shop, but a lot of times you go in and tell the shop what you just told me, and the diagnostic fee goes crazy because there's going to be kind of this second guessing going on. So in your case, if this is what you say, I can show you how to make it happen, and I want to do that right now, please, and tell me what your diagnostic fee, and then call me with the repair, and you got to promise that your repair is going to fix my intermittent dying and stalling problem and idle. That's what you do. And then you want your old part back, because if Salem doesn't fix your car, then you come back and say, Mr. Salem, please put this part back on. put my old one back on, because there it is. And we need to start over, but let me know about the diagnostic charge. Well, if I blew it on the front side, I'm going to go back and figure out what it is. So anyway, hey, Tom, stay right there, because we'll be back right after this. Forty-five minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Tom's sitting here with me. He's from Action Auto. He's the guy that signs the front of the check as opposed to the back of the check. Hold on. I don't know why I don't have you up. Try it again.
Am I here?
No, you're not. Oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, there you are.
All right.
Now you are. I don't know. He kicked me in the face. I'm going to hit the table. Anyway, 45 minutes after the hour, Tom is Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, the northwest corner. And I can tell you, I've told a lot of people to go to him, and he's never let me down. Tom, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes. Yeah, I have two questions, if I may. Number one, 2017 Honda Accord, 110,000 miles, not overheating or anything. I'm going to change the coolant. Is there like a four-man flush or anything I should do other than dump and refill?
How does the coolant look to begin with?
I had any problem with it. Go ahead.
Yeah, my initial thing is no, there's probably not. I would certainly, again, we like to test, and we do a millivolt test on coolant to make sure that electrolysis levels are low. But in the meantime, I would certainly drain it out, and you know, if you want to run a garden hose through it, see if you can break anything up. But it doesn't sound like it is. A Honda Accord's a great engine. You know, we don't see problems with them. But certainly fresh fluids. Hey, not only the coolant, but make sure the transmission and, you know, power steering and the other fluids get service as well. But it's a good idea.
What I mean, if you got brown coolant in there, then the answer's different. But if you've got some color of coolant in there, then that would suggest that the coolant could be worn out, but it's certainly not dirty. So what color is the coolant that's in there?
It's green.
Okay. I don't know that they put green in a...
Yeah, Honda has a...
In a 17?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Well, you got two choices. You can get the Honda coolant or you can get the universal coolant. And the universal coolant is covering a lot of different cars with the exception of a couple of exotics. And actually, we pour the universal on just about everything because it's too doggone expensive and difficult to carry. I don't know, how many different brands of coolant could we run across?
Oh, they probably got a couple dozen.
Yeah, so it's not possible for us to have the blue and the orange and the yellow and the pink and the purple and the black. We just can't do it.
But Honda does use an extended life.
Yeah.
Life green coolant.
So that's what we would do is if it's green now, then just flush it and put it back. And I would suggest that you use a 5-gallon can and you use a gallon of your coolant and a gallon of water so that you ensure that you have a 50-50 mix, because 70, 30, or 90, 10 is bad. So the coolant needs water in which to operate with, okay?
All right. I had one other question, if I may.
Sure.
AC compressor seems to be cycling a lot more than it should. I was going to put my gauges on it to try and get an idea of working right and the pressure. Should I speed up the idle when I put the gauges on or check it at an idle?
Well, it's got two switches, a low pressure and a high pressure. So the question is, yeah, is which one of those is doing it? And how many miles are on it?
110.
Let me ask you a question, Tom. Do you have a suck it, check it, clean it, and put it back in?
Yes, we do.
Okay, and what's that service cost?
It's approximately $90.
Okay, and we're 100. And what I'm suggesting is what would be better for you other than you stuff Freon in it? You bring it to a shop that has a refrigeration recycle machine. We're going to suck all yours out. We're going to clean it. We're going to weigh it. Let's pretend you take 30 ounces. So you've got 20 in there. So we know the low pressure switch. What?
The pressure on that is, or the weight is 0.9.
Okay. When I'm just using numbers, they can understand because they're on 0.9.
So it's less than a pound.
Okay.
It's less than a pound of refrigerant that goes in that Honda.
Okay. So the idea is that we're going to take yours out and we're going to clean it up and put it right back in. Now, if you need an ounce or two, we'll add that to it. But that, and that's the first dipstick we've ever had for refrigerant. We've always just flew by the seat of our pants. So that's what I would do if you're concerned with that. Forget the pressures. Forget all that fancy stuff. Just go in and have it sucked and filled up. And then you got a 50-50 chance or better that your problem's going to be solved after 110,000 miles. All righty?
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and trusted. Trusted a lot. Source for complete automotive services. Chuck Nyde opened up Sun City Auto Dynamics in 1982. I've known Chuck since 1968. So I know that Chuck's been in the car business for a very long time. I've worked next to him and with him and for him. So I know that his staff and those guys know the difference between right and wrong. And actually, Derek, his son, runs Auto Dynamics. So he's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Not too far away is a diesel shop, Strictly Diesel. Nate owns Strictly Diesel, and he's over at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Strictly Diesel means what it says. They service and repair and have parts for foreign and domestic light diesel trucks. So they sell parts 24 hours a day on their website as well. I don't know if you walk in there, you'll know you're talking to Nate because I'm exaggerating. He's 10 foot tall and his hands look like tennis rackets. He's just a big guy. But the demeanor and the way he presents himself is exactly what you don't want your daughter to bring home. He's just a good guy. So if you have a diesel and nobody else can fix it, then certainly Strictly Diesel. Now, if you have a Honda, he'll also do oil changes on your Honda. But the diesel is the real strong one. Gil, we got anybody?
Nope, lines are open.
Okay. When we talk about car repair, what's your diagnostic fee? Now, it could be a check engine light. It could be a refrigeration. It could be a whine, a hum, a vibration. A lot of guys are starting to split that up.
Well, yeah, it all depends. What are you going to be up against?
What about the door lock?
Well, the door lock on that would probably be in the neighborhood of 100 to 100 and a half.
I would have said the same thing. I would have said 125, give or take 25.
Yeah, you're gonna have to get into the wiring and hook up some equipment, and hopefully you can duplicate it with the heat on that particular car.
Yeah, and we've had a couple of other ones. We've got that one that runs out of fuel at higher speeds.
That's going to be, again, depending.
Okay.
It could be a simple $75 check and nail the problem right out of the park to begin with. It could be something that's going to drag out.
So
it's an open line of communication is what that's going to be.
I tell folks, You have to know that every once in a while we hit a home run because it's $75 to find it and $1 to fix it. But don't hold on to that because right, that's not likely going to happen. There was a guy I talked to not too long ago at a dealer operation. What's your labor rate?
We're sitting about 122, I think, is where we're at right now.
What are people around you?
I don't know. I would say we're in the same boat, but I don't know how big that boat is.
Okay, so they're five up and five down from your 122?
Right, I know people that are 100 and a half.
Okay, so 10 up, 10 down from yours. He was saying that he knew somebody who was charging 108 for the first hour and 164 for each hour. So when you call, they quote you 108. So it's 108 for any diagnostic, but the second hour and each subsequent hour is 164. I don't like that. I don't like to play games like that.
Well, he's digging bigger holes. That's what's happening. You know?
Yeah, and like you said, it has a lot to do with how well the customer and you can have a conversation. Can we get close to what it is? The one guy with air conditioning with cycled. That's not going to be a $200 diagnosis.
No.
That's going to be easy. We got the equipment to do it. That's going to be easy. Who we got, Gil?
We have Harry.
Harry, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
I'm good.
Good, good. Hey, I've got two questions. Both are kind of oil related. Bought a new vehicle. I bought a Ford, Mark. I know that makes you happy.
I'm sorry, Harry. You must have hit your head that day.
Must have been. Yeah, it's got one of those, well, your son told me that this is the best way to go.
Yeah.
It's got one of your, it's got one of the EcoBoost 3.5. And, it has a direct injection, obviously. With the,
turbochargers.
Two turbos. And they're saying, you know, with this direct injection, you have the intake valve coking and all that. A lot of vehicles have that problem. And supposedly in 2015, Ford solved that problem by, I don't know, I guess they added that other turbo on there. What's your feeling on those oil catch cans? And also, since it's a new vehicle, how many miles before the first oil change? Because the dealer's saying 7,500, and I think that's, because it's a semi-synthetic, and I think that's a little high.
Well, I like the 7,500 for a semi-synthetic. I don't think that they're expanding the picture. A semi-synthetic is in the vernacular I'm in. And I testify as an oil expert a lot. We had a case not too long ago where there was a question on, did you put the right brand in there? And the fact of the matter is we can't tell you what brand of oil it is because there's only four guys that make it.
Right.
So if you show us the can, we can tell you, but it's not put it in the laboratory and say, oh, this is Chevron, or oh, this is Motorcraft, or oh, this is Dexos, the General Motors. You can't do that. You want to talk about the Ford?
Well.
The direct injection.
Right. The, you know, and since we're running dry intake manifolds, but the crankcase system still has to, you know, breathe out all the vapors from the engine. It does cause a lot of valve train issues. We're seeing a lot of turbocharger failures. But let's get back to the catch can. How are you driving this vehicle? Are you out on the racetrack running around in circles smoking the tires? Or are you driving it like a normal human being?
Harry?
Much like a normal human being.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when Ford or Chevy or
Dodge?
Any manufacturer builds a vehicle, they put hundreds of thousands of miles on these things. If the manufacturer thought that it needed a catch can to protect itself, they would have one. But, again, they're not testing the cars for performance. They're not Rusty Wallacing it out across, you know, the country. So it depends on how you drive it. Catch cans, I see, are the hot rodders. It's a buzz.
I think what we're trying to say to you, Harry, is drive it like you stole it. If you're going to drive around with a hot cup of coffee between your legs and it's full and you're never going to spill any coffee, then that's not what I'm thinking about. So I for the rest of everybody else, direct injection. We used to have the valve open, the intake valve open, and we were introducing air and gasoline at the same time. Any oil that was there, because we have to lubricate that valve stem, any oil that was there would be washed by the gasoline to some extent into the engine. They've taken all of that away, and now we're injecting the fuel right into the cylinder. The problem with that is...
Right next to the spark plug.
Right next to the spark plug. And the problem with that system is we don't have the gas washing the back of the intake valve anymore. So we have this coking. And pretty soon, the black sponge carbon is so big that it inhibits that valve from that cylinder from getting air. So we're only sending air through that valve, and we don't do gasoline anymore. This direct injection is one of the biggest boondoggles we've had. And right now, the only thing to do is either go chisel it out or use a variety of chemicals to clean it up.
Right, walnut shells, whatever.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. I'm going to tell you that most of the people that I see that don't really suffer from the carbon and the direct injection mal are the people that drive it bad, hard and bad.
Right. That's where the catch can comes in, because the catch can helps remove some of those pollutants that we have that the PCB system is sucking off at the top of the motor.
Yeah. Harry, did you hit your head in the last couple of months?
Well, I've always been GM, but, boy, they treated me badly on my diesel.
So I understand that. Harry's a good friend of Kurt's. And okay. When I was there doing a remote one time, he was there. Aren't you a fireman? Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm sitting here with Tom from Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. How's that big LED sign still working? You still like that?
That thing works flawlessly.
Good.
It's a beautiful little machine.
And you have a young lady or one of your employees that can program it and put all kinds of messages on
whatever
it and all that kind of stuff?
Whatever she wants to put on there, she can put on there.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. Good. Okay, we're going to get back to Harry in just a minute. But when we talk about the back of the intake valves, you have a process you use, and it's been real successful.
Well, that's the BG.
All right.
Yeah, BG Chemical Services. It absolutely works fantastic.
Okay.
We can stick a camera down the intake and take a look and see what's going on with the intake set.
Okay.
To see just how much of a buildup there is, then clean it out and get another look at it.
Okay. Now, when you go down, are you going down right through the throttle body or the air intake?
Right through the, yeah.
Okay. Now, you're cranking the motor over, you can actually see the back of the valve?
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. Those all have electronic fly-by-wire systems. You don't touch the key when you have those open.
Okay.
I'll chop your fingers off.
All right. Well, I was wondering how do you see the back of the valve when you go down through the intake?
You just got to keep moving the camera around till you get
to the back of the valve.
Intake, yeah.
Can you do each cylinder?
It gets difficult at times,
okay.
But we know that if we got one cylinder that's gummed up,
yeah,
we know the other ones are gummed up right along with it.
Okay, are you going to introduce this through the air side or the fuel side?
It goes into the intake. Well, actually, with the BG system, it goes on all of them. When it goes into the fuel side, it's addressing fuel injector, and the injector's down there with the spark plug.
Okay.
But the other one goes through the intake. We completely wet the intake manifold, and down it goes and cleans it up. And
the valves that are open are going to go ahead and leak
it in? Well, the engine's running at that point.
Okay, all right.
Inspecting the engine's off.
Okay.
Cleaning, engine's running.
Okay, Harry, I know you had one other question.
Yeah, on those catch cans, I actually had the two. I wanted to on the oil change, it'd be my first oil change. I haven't been driving it very much, obviously, because of our situation everybody's in now. I was kind of looking at maybe changing the oil, first oil change at about 3,000.
It makes you feel better?
Because it's a new motor, and, is that, that's what I've always done, but things change, so.
Right.
Well, Tom said the key words, if it makes you feel better, go ahead.
Right. You can change it every week if it makes you feel better.
But. Yeah, it's today the oils go a lot longer because they have a wider range of service, and the detergent value, its ability to carry trash into the oil filter is pretty good. We had a pretty spirited discussion about the catch cans, and I think what Tom said is most important. If you have a problem with your engine and you take it into the dealer and they see an alteration to any portion of the top of that motor or any portion of the motor, then they're going to get up on that pedestal and say, you've changed the dynamics of the motor, and therefore your warranty's no good. And you run a risk of that with a catch can. So just be careful. We've seen them do that. I see them do it twice a year. How often do you see them? I see that somebody's had problems with changing something, even an air filter. And then all of a sudden you got this problem.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All righty, Harry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because you're interfering or you're altering the
right. Again, they put hundreds of thousands of miles goes on these vehicles when they're developing it. They spend millions of dollars developing a car for some guy on YouTube to come along and say, here's a $50 alteration that works great. He didn't spend the research and development on that.
And a lot of times it's a high-profit thing. They've got an old fuel filter that's banded up, and that's all it is an old fuel filter or some kind of remember the old fresh air cleaners we had in the air filters of the Chevrolets, the little white filters.
Yep. The lid upside down, it sounds even better.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Well, Harry, thank you very much. Tom, you're up next. How can we help you?
Tom? Good evening, Mark.
Good.
Easter.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I have a 2006 Duramax, and my ABS light keeps coming on. Is it safe to drive it?
It's orange, right?
Yes, it is orange.
Okay, orange means it's okay, and red means it's not okay. So that's kind of the way it is. Tom, you get one guess on what might be turning on this check engine light.
Well, I would want to test before I start guessing.
Okay, but I mean...
ABS is, we're taking away the brakes. So...
Taking away the control of the brakes.
Yeah. When we were kids, we were driving around with cars with non-ABS. And right now, you got a Chevy truck with non-ABS.
And what he's saying is the system's down because the light's on. Yeah. So you don't have ABS.
So you could slip in the mud or on the ice and you'll slip.
And what you could do, too, is you could go by and have the Three Whisker Kid clear the code for you. And then go straight for a while. Straight. Get on the freeway and go straight. Maybe 5 miles, 10 miles down the road. You see, what we find a lot of times, I'm not diagnosing your car over the radio, is a wheel sensor. And so if you go out and you find that straight up and straight back, it doesn't come on, but you go over to Bash's and behind the grocery store and you do circles to the right and circles to the left and light comes on, then it's because one of the wheels is not being monitored anymore. The problem is you got four sensors, so you have to figure that out. For us, we plug in this very expensive machine. It takes two guys, so that means it's $400 an hour. Isn't that what your shop is?
No.
No, I'm just teasing you. So it takes two guys. One drives and one doesn't. Yeah. And he looks at the scanner, and we're looking at the wheels. And then all of a sudden, if you make a right turn hard, then obviously the right side tires are going to turn less than the left side tires. And so we're watching all of that. And then all of a sudden, we have one wheel sensor just drop out altogether. So you haven't given us any noises when you apply the brakes. You haven't said anything other than you got a check engine light.
Yeah, it doesn't make any noise at all. So
right. It's
just a light coming on.
But a typical ABS malfunction is usually a little bit more than just the sensor.
Yeah.
They do have wheel bearings, and those wheel bearings get a little bit of play to them, and then that takes the ability of that sensor to read correctly, which is why the light comes on.
It wobbles the rotor and stuff, and so the sensor takes a beating.
Yeah, the exciter ring.
But in reality, before you put a sensor in it, if you had a sensor code, all you got to do is grab that tire and wheel from top to bottom.
Right.
And if it's got play in it.
There's a procedure for testing. Yes.
Yeah. So it's something that's not tough. Give me a range of diagnostics for this.
I'm going to say that's at the minimum. So you're going to be in the $80 neighborhood to isolate that issue. However, it could be something else. It could have been a rodent that ran up there and chewed a bunch of wires. We see that every day. But in this situation, based on what you're telling us, it's going to be a low-level inspection.
And I think 75 to 1 and a quarter is what I'm hearing from a lot of the other guys. And so that's within the range you're talking about. You just don't know. I want you to hear 125, but it could be as little as 75, and I'll call you when I get where I need to go.
Yeah, that's going to be the communication that you have with the repair center. So.
And all of us are different, but we're not going to be very different unless you run across the guy that's 108 on the first hour and 164 on the others. We just did an area around us, and the average is well over $140 an hour. But I don't know if that's because of where we're at today or if it was before, but we're monitoring the average. And we're also finding some guys up in the 160 range for passenger cars and light trucks. And, of course, if everybody's bidding an hour on the diagnostic, then all of a sudden he's at $160, and he's also at $320 for 2 hours. So I don't know how to take that, but I like being in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be the cheapest, and I don't want to be the most expensive. So anyway, Tom, good luck to you. And, Gil, we got anybody else?
Yes, we have Hank.
Hank, good morning.
Good morning. My wife and I moved here from out of state 2 years ago and bought a 2019 Santa Fe Hyundai SUV, and we have 2,500 miles on it. It's about 6 or 7 months, and the dealer is telling us we need to change the oil, and the maintenance manual says only 6,000 miles or a year is necessary, and I just wanted your take on whether we need to change oil that much more often because of the hot weather.
Okay, I want to go first on this one.
Okay.
All right. Here's what I tell people when I teach in grade schools and when I teach adults. When you're there and you get that, and you've already read the owner's manual, you pull the owner's manual out of your car, no matter what shop it is, and you hand it to them and you say, well, will you show me in the owner's manual where that says that? 99 times out of 100, the person you're talking to is a non-technical person. It's a service writer. And they're not going to be able to pull that off. But sometimes what comes out of their mouth is this. Well, that book's not written for Arizona. Then
yeah.
This plan B is why don't you order me one from Arizona and call me when it comes in? Now, okay. If here's the third thing. You call another dealership or another shop. If you're dealing with dealerships, you got to do another dealership. And you get to the service part and you say, hey, I got this independent shop. And this independent shop is saying that I need an oil change right now. But in reality, I've got it much longer to go. What do you think about that? Now, most of the times, we'll poop on one another. And we'll want to be the hero, so we'll do that. So I've given you all the self-defense for car expense mechanisms I can give you. And you can always, and then the last one's this. You know what? I gotta dwell on this. Let me do this. Get a business card out and write down, you need to have your oil changed at this amount, and then just initial it for me. And they won't do that either.
Uh-huh.
They won't do. So what you're doing is you're saying, I'm calling your hand. And right. It's a nice way to do it. But neither one of us agrees with what you've been told.
Right. So between the lines, I'm hearing that is sort
one
of.
Minute.
Sales-centric as opposed to mechanical-centric.
Well, I don't think they know how many miles you have cold or hot. I don't know how many highway miles or going to the liquor store for your wife. They didn't ask you any of that. And they didn't also take the oil cap off and look to see how much carbon and crap is inside your oil. And then they didn't pull the dipstick and just take a look at the color of the oil, which will give you some idea of how much dirt it contains. So...
Right.
I want to tell you something. This happens in the chains, the independents, and the dealers. Okay?
Okay.
There's people in all three of those categories that all of a sudden change the manual for the benefit of them. And I would suggest that, you know, we had people come in that have a 1 year, 25,000 mile transmission services, and they're wanting to do it three times a year. Some shop wants to do it three times a year. I don't like that. Okay?
Okay. I got it.
Thank you, Hank.
Thank you for your help.
All righty. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Automatic Transmission Exchange has been in Phoenix since 1968, and Phil's been there since 1968. Phil does a great job on transmission diagnostics, transmission repairs, leak replacements, and he says he doesn't do much replacements because a lot of the transmissions are simply fixable. Unlike the days of past when 60,000 miles and they were going to transmission heaven. So in Phoenix, the only shop I can recommend as far as automatic transmission is Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. We'll be right back. Well, Mark wants to clean something up. It's important to know what we were just talking about. If people in the auto repair industry changing the parameters because of self-serving purposes. In the old days, we got to see you every 3,000 miles, and so we got to rotate your tires every other time, and we got to do this, and we got to do that. So you were a steady income stream for us. Now, all of a sudden, we go from 3,000 miles to 10, 12, and 15,000 miles, and you can understand that we just lost a lot of business. So you can understand that there's going to be some people, I'm not saying you can understand or accept it, there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of shops, and like I said, independents, chain stores, and dealerships, that are going to fib about your time frames so they can have another lick of you. They can take advantage of you, or they can sell you something. Many of the new cars don't have fluid changes until 100,000 miles, but we live in Phoenix, and you have to do it more often because we live in Phoenix. That's what you're up against. So the old one about, well, just write down your name on the back of your business card and your phone number. I need to talk to my husband, especially for women. I need to talk to my husband. Put what I need there and put the dollar for me. And I'm going to tell you right now, 95 times out of 100, they're not going to do that for you. Kurt's Automotive. Don't you know him?
I do know Kurt.
Kurt's at I-17 in Bell. And I think you guys work really well together. You always talk nice about one another.
Yeah, we're all getting old at the same time. Trying to figure that out.
It is true. When we were young, we hated all of our competitors. As we get old, we say, hey, Kurt, can you look at this? Or he calls you, hey, Tom, can you look at this?
Absolutely.
We can't see the forest for the trees. So Kurt's is I-17 in Bell, the northeast corner. He's been around since 1987. He's a master technician. He works on both domestic and import, both gas and diesel. Now, he's a master, so he can tell you, he knows if his employees are blowing smoke in your ears. So it's important that the owner has some certifications or has a real deep knowledge, and Kurt's, you don't have to worry about that. So Kurt's Automotive, I-17 in Bell, northeast corner, a good place if you live in that area, a good place. And stop by for an oil change and see how you like them and how they treat you and if they give you a big laundry list of stuff that you need in your car. Now, to clear things up, if your car has 120,000 miles on it and nothing's been changed, that's an easy one to open up the barn door.
Absolutely. They need to be inspected.
Yep.
And you need to know what's going on. And that's where you got to develop a relationship with whatever shop that you're at. And hold their feet to the fire when things go wrong.
And when you say that, it was always oil change. Check the fluids, the filters, the belts, and the hoses.
Make sure you're not going to break down.
Right.
Check the brakes. That's safety.
Right. And if it's a tire rotation, you always check the brakes anyway. So you're right. It is difficult to explain to a customer that 400 miles ago, he blew a tire and the steel was hanging out and we just did an oil change on it.
Right.
That's going to be kind of tough.
That's our job, is to make sure that does not happen to you.
Okay. But
now, you don't have to buy it. You just need to know about it.
And those are the obvious things, but I just checked your belts and hoses 2,000 miles ago on your oil change and you lost one of them. That's kind of hard. Did you have the old one? Can I look at it? Is it glazed? Has it been overheated? What happened? That's a tough thing to do, and I think you'll agree that it really has to do with the customer that's in front of you. If it's a first-time customer, you may not extend the courtesies to somebody who's been with you for 10 years.
Again, do what's right.
Okay.
If you do what's right, it'll always be right.
Are you collecting DOT numbers on tires?
I am not.
You know how many of those cases I have right now?
No, I do not.
Yeah,
but I'm having conversations with my guys at the moment, because you did send me that email at the beginning of the week.
I've got at least five of those. A lady has four different DOT codes, four different brands of tires. She just bought this vehicle.
Changing them one at a time.
Hey. She just bought the vehicle. So she goes to shop one, and they tell her you have one tire that's expired. She goes to the second shop, and they tell her the tires are okay. There's a crash. The tire blows up. People die.
The okay person's in problems.
And everybody in the food chain that touched the tires on that car is part of the food chain. It happens all the time, and it's really predominant now, really predominant. So we're doing DOTs on everything. Here's the problem. How long does it take to get from the mold to someone's car?
I would say a couple weeks.
It can be a year and a half.
Oh, is it that long?
So you're talking about date of production versus date of installation. And that tire can sit in a warehouse. Now, the warehouses are saying that we stack the tires up, so old, newest in at the back.
Fresh in, fresh out, yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of signs that that's not happening. But it's easy. It depends on who you talk to, but at least 8 months and a year and a half, and that tire can be a year old when they put it on. Now, if it's a 10-year kind of thing, we don't go by the production date. We go by the DOT, and the DOT is the production date. So it's kind of tough, and that's a real big deal right now. Real. Okay, who we got on the phone, Gil?
We have Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Morning, guys. So I've never heard Mark say anything good about those GDI engines, gasoline direct injection. So what was the reason that the car companies brought them out in the first place?
Fuel efficiency.
Fuel economy, yeah.
Performance.
Yeah.
They can go with a smaller engine, get more performance, and better fuel economy. That's what the federal government wants.
The direct injection is a problem across all the cars that have it, but so was fuel injection in 1981 when they came out. So was EGR valves in 1976 and 73 when they came out. So this technology will evolve, but the fact of the matter is, no matter what anybody says, it's still a problem right now. And there's a lot of machine shops that we're sending heads to that go, and you go, on a 1 to 10 scale, what's this carbon look like? And he goes, an 11. So we have it, those problems.
It requires maintenance.
Yeah.
And if you do the maintenance on a GDI engine, it's fine. However, the amount of money that you're saving on fuel economy, you're spending in repairs, or maintenance, I should say.
It's a wash.
So maintenance, is that the walnut blasting and all that? Well, is that what you're calling the maintenance?
That's what BMW wants us to do, and certainly we do that. But again, we have a chemical that we can run the chemical through and clean up the intake and the backside of the valves. Again, it doesn't work when it's neglected.
And give me price ranges on the walnuts.
Well, walnuts, you could be into $1,000, okay, depending on the vehicle.
I agree. And then as far as the treatment, the cleaners?
$250 neighborhood.
Okay, on four-cylinder, V6 and V8?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay. So 200, 250, let's give it a window for the rest of the guys in the industry.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of problems out there. Tom talked about pattern failures. There's a lot of pattern failures out there. We're seeing camshafts on the GM side. We're seeing the intake manifolds melt on the Dodge. A little, what is that called? It's not an EcoDiesel. It's something else.
Whatever their V6 diesel engine on.
And so we're seeing lots of pattern failures, and we see air conditioning compressors fail, especially the ones that come out brand new. We see tires that fail. We see all kinds of stuff like that. So it's tied with its introduction into the industry. So the answer to your question, Bob, is this will probably be all fixed in probably 2-3 years, maybe 4, yeah, hopefully.
Do you think the GDI is here to stay then?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yes?
Absolutely.
We just got to fix the problem, because we created a problem by not washing the back of the valves off with gas, so we just have to figure out how they're going to do it. I think they're going to put a Teflon material in there so nothing sticks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just kidding. Anyway, thanks a lot, Bob. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. So if you want to ask a car question, you're welcome. 602-508-0960. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And let me tell you real quick about Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I've dealt with them a lot, and here's why. Because if you're in the geographical area of Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, and you have a problem like every time you honk the horn, there's music that's played from your glove box, then they have the tenacity to find that. They have fixed cars that had weird symptoms, and for everybody that was involved looks at that and goes, how did they ever get there? So they do all the oil changes and all that kind of stuff. But between Bob and Jeremy, they just have that kind of tenacity. And when I ask him, I say, are you 100% efficient? Are you charging for the time you spent? And he smiled and he goes, not normally. And I said, why not? And he goes, because maybe when we circled the wagons, we did the whole circle, but really we missed it when we were at 30 instead of 60. So he says, that's it. But nevertheless, Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Arthur, you're up.
Well, good morning to you, gentlemen. I called just because I wanted to let you know that a couple of years ago you steered me towards Action Auto and Tom and his crew, Nick, Joe, Kathy, and the rest. And I got to say that they are spot on. When I first was investigating them, I took my car to a couple of different places, priced it out. Different work that was being done. They've always come in a little bit under most of the competitors, but they've always done great work. They've always done everything that they've said they could, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to them that there is a top-notch outfit, and I'm glad you steered me over to them. I'm sure that your other mechanical shops are, almost as good.
And here's what I won't take. Geographically, they're all broke up a lot. So
right.
There's really not anybody up there. And he's got a BMW technician that knows more about BMW than BMW does. But it's nice to hear that kind of comment, that you like Action, you like Tom, they've treated you fair, because those kinds of reviews are few and far between.
Yes, thank you. It takes a lot to put a team together, and you know, we try to keep them together and develop the ones that we can.
Hey, you've done a great job. I do have a question. My horn won't stop honking, and Nick took a look at it, and we pulled the. He's done most everything, but I think it's come down to a point where I'm going to probably have a steering wheel or an airbag assembly. You know, the whole shoot and match, that the contacts in the back of it are binding up, and this for a Toyota. And I'm wondering if you, it's about $1,000 job, and I just really, you know, time is money is tight right now, so I'm just wondering, is there some other, you know, places where you know, Tom, where you can you can't apparently go down to the wrecking yard and buy a steering wheel with the airbag anymore, just because of the safety involved.
No, you can. But we're not.
Yeah.
What you're talking about is at the back of the steering wheel, there's what we call a clock spring, and the steering wheel moves, right. But we gotta, and the clock spring wears out. And how many miles are on your car?
Oh, way too many.
Okay. Yeah.
A couple hundred thousand.
There's no shortcut. And here's the problem. Those of us that are smart and have gray hair in our nose, we're not going to do anything other than everything, because if the airbag doesn't deploy when your wife hits another car, we're in the food chain. Automatically, we're in the food chain. So what would help is, if you were to drive that car, this is something you could do. And when you turn the steering wheel, hit the steering wheel hard with your fist and keep your hand on the horn. And see if you can hit the steering wheel in a particular location, which is what we want to see, and the horn will work. Then that pretty much tells you the clock spring is the problem.
Well, the context.
Yeah, I think, you know, Nick went through. I mean, the thing just would not shut off. It just was a solid blaring horn, and he pulled, you know, the fuses, and pulled the. It's not a fuse. What is it? Another little electronic component in your
the relay.
The relay, and all of that, seemed to be fine. And he came up with the same conclusion that the springs had probably just worn in one, particular area. So, that was his best guesstimate.
What else could it be other than the clock spring?
The contactor.
Yeah. The clock spring has one end that's fixed, and it's a coil, and the other end sits the steering wheel. And when I ask you how many miles it's got on it, you wouldn't tell me. But the clock, if you want to guess, the clock spring is by far the best, easiest part to do. But the 1,000, is he bidding an airbag and a clock spring?
Well, it's the module. Airbag module is the contactor.
Okay.
And then the clock spring clips into the back of that, and then that's your spiral for left and right.
Okay.
And then it clips into the...
Okay, well, that's not the module. That's where the squibs are at. That's right. Where we fire the airbag from.
Yep.
And you're right. If you do one and not the other, you always run that risk. So I agree with Tom. Okay?
Right.
Thank you, Arthur.
You bet.
All righty. Tony, you're up next.
Mark, thanks for taking my call. My question pertains to a 95 Ford Bronco, full size. I purchased it, needing an engine at the time, and being cheap, I bought it right and started digging into it, the engine itself that was in it. And lo and behold, I had to go through pretty much the whole fuel system, and that had sat idle for about 8 years, not running. So I fixed multiple things on it. It has stuck valve, bent push rod, completely clogged injectors right on down the line. I went through all that, fuel tank and that, got it running really nice. But the last hurdle I have is that if you drive it, there's no check engine light when you initially start it, and it idles, and you put it in gear. As soon as you get up to maybe about 15 miles per hour, I get a check engine light. The code to that light corresponds to an EGR system, and what I've done with the EGR system so far is I checked the the sensor on top of the valve that, you know.
Okay, well, hold on, Tony, we can't go on forever. When you check the sensor, tell me what you checked and what reading you got.
Okay, I just checked for movement on that sensor on top of the valve. It does move. The EGR valve itself does hold vacuum.
Okay, all right, please. The code says what state the problem's in. You have to find the city and the street and the address. There is lots of reasons we'll have an EGR code that has nothing to do with the EGR code or the EGR system or the EGR itself. So if you're gonna chase the code, the parts guys love you. But I ask you about checking the sensor, and the sensor is going to be one reading when it's wide open and one reading when it's closed. And that's important because the EGR and the sensor, each one of those could be a problem, or both of them are the problem. So we can't tell you what the problem is. But I think you need some help. I think you should call around and find out who's going to charge you to track down an EGR code. But the little kid, three-whiskered kid at the auto parts store, he's to sell parts. So they look at the code and sell you parts. And I can tell you 25% of the O2 sensor codes we have are fuel filters that are restricted and plugged. And so it's running lean. And so there's a fuel filter that's bad, and I have an O2 sensor code. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, so, you can't just shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
You got to find out why the messenger's telling you that.
So anyway, Tony, I got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get with Mike and Mike. Well, welcome back, everybody. 46 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Do you remember what the name of that guy was with the horn issue?
Arthur.
Arthur, okay. I don't know why you just, I don't understand. There is a real simple problem or fix for this $1,000 repair that you guys quoted him.
You're not talking about unplugging the horn.
Well, I was thinking.
I don't know, you have to evaluate. You know, sometimes we get cars
you
in.
You shook your head the first time I said that.
Sometimes you get cars in that are at the end of their life. You know, you got grandma. Does she really need the heart transplant?
Yeah.
You know, so everybody's got a different approach to things.
You're right. A lot of the cars, not this car, but a lot of the cars have a horn pad, Fords. They go off in the middle of the night. Take the horn pad off, and then you're done.
Right.
And then you just go. But the horn pad's going to come in tan, and the car has a blue interior, and then what are we going to do then? So the blue ones aren't made anymore, so you have all those problems. Okay, we're going to go to Mike number one. Mike, how can we help you?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So, I have a check engine light that came on. It's a P0442 emission system leak. So, the first time I went to the shop, they replaced the overflow and rollover valves and gaskets.
Okay.
And the fuel pump gasket. I've been back 3 times since, and they keep telling me, well, we'll keep on trying, bring it back. Is that something that I should be concerned about with this mechanic, or is this something that's standard for that emission code?
Wait a minute. How many times has he guessed?
Well, if the check engine light is on right now, but he's looked at the vehicle 4 times.
Okay, and how much money have we spent 4 times?
He hasn't charged me all 4 times. He's only charged me the first time, but that was like 600 and something.
So let me put it in perspective. You spent $600, you've been back 4 times, and you still have the same problem.
Yes.
Okay. Well, it doesn't take no... I mean, from a guy in the car repair industry, you got to move on. Now, the mistake you made was not asking for your old parts back. You should have done that. Mm. You could go back to the credit card company and you could ask them. But I think before you do that, you should get it fixed. Once you get it fixed, everybody will know what caused the problem. And if they were on the right track, okay. And if they were wrong on the wrong track, then okay. But we as a shop has a responsibility to diagnose it correctly and stand behind our diagnosis. This sounds like somebody who was born yesterday that doesn't have any whiskers, and he's rented some old Quick Loops. And I'm not guessing it's your guy. But there's a lot of people in our industry that are just guessers. They don't have the technical skills, and they don't have the equipment necessary to figure out something. So they're going to guess with your money, and you know and I know that that's what happened here. So you could also give him one more chance and say to him, you better look at it, because next I'm going to take it to another shop. And then, of course, if he fixes it, then I'm going to come back, and it's not related to anything you did, I'm going to come back and want my $600 back. I don't know how well that'll work out for you.
Appropriate to do.
Say that.
I mean, it could have been these valves, and gaskets still needed to be replaced, but chances are it wasn't multi-level, right? The problem.
Well, no one's going to know till you fix it. But the answer is every once in a while you get two problems that force the same code. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to defend him. If you said that was my shop, I would be terribly upset. And you've been in four times. There is no credit for him being a good guy with a good heart. If you've been in four times, he charged you $600 on the front end. It's had it in there three other times, and you still have the problem. So, you know what? Just let me ask you a question. Does your wife have a bark? Does she have a bark and a bite? Send her back in there.
That's a good idea.
You know, arm her with the necessary stuff, and then just go in and say, in the absence of you being able to fix this, and you haven't made any progress, I'm going to take it someplace else, but I want to put you on notice that if they fix it, and the check engine light doesn't come on, and everything's fine for a month, then I'm going to come back and I'm going to ask you to refund my money. But I bet that if you stop payment on the car and you just give them payment on the credit card, if you just give them the two bills, this one $600 did nothing. This one is X amount and it fixed it. And here's a statement from the second shop. Then you're done. And I think most of the time the credit card will step in front of you and stop payment. What's the shop going to do? Tell Visa that I'm not going to take any more Visa cards? Is the shop going to tell MasterCard to go away? So that doesn't happen. Well, good luck, Mike. You're in a bad situation, but I've given you the best advice I can give you. Mike, number two, you're up.
Hi, this is Mike. I'm sitting here listening to you playing solitaire. I can't do anything else.
Okay.
So I come up with the question. I got a Denali 06 with the 600 cubic or the 6 liter engine.
Okay.
And it's got 122,000 miles, and I'm wondering about the spark plug. Time to change?
Well, absolutely. Well, when's the last time they were changed? Because they were supposed to be done at 100,000, right?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of slipped my mind.
Okay, yes. Yes, you want to take care of that.
Well, the good news is you don't have a miss yet. And they're probably platinum, and they're not going to be $3.95 a piece. But that's okay. You've been around the world five times with those spark plugs if you've got 122,000 miles. It's 24,885 or something like that around the girth of the earth. But just forgive me. It's easier for me to go to 25,000. So 122,000, he's been around the world five times. Let me ask you a question, Mike, and I want you to laugh about this. Just how long did you think those spark plugs were going to last? If I put it in that perspective. How long did you think those spark plugs were going to last? Once I put it in the perspective, well, you've driven the equator five times.
Where's the wear point on them?
Well, the manufacturer says 100,000 miles.
Right.
So the electrode, the gap is getting too far that it won't spark anymore?
That's the old ones. We have platinum plugs that don't have any transfer of metal, and we've got some that do. So we don't eyeball them anymore. That's a preventative maintenance stuff.
It's called maintenance.
Yeah. It's not a cause and effect. It's really, this isn't when it's due. It's kind of like coolant. If they go 100,000 miles, replace the coolant. That kind of stuff. So, and I you want to throw a number?
Financially.
Go ahead.
Financially, a good idea to change them.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. If you were my brother and I loved my brother, I would say it's a good idea. If you were my wife's brother I would say, nah, go another 80,000.
Well, hang on. When you know,
heading back to snowmobile country pretty soon. So.
Okay.
Well, when the spark plugs are running and they're not performing as optimal, they're taking a toll on catalytic converters. Catalytic converters are not inexpensive; they're very expensive. So you're protecting the catalyst by maintaining the engine.
Okay.
And it doesn't. You won't know how much power you've lost until you put a set of plugs in. And it's not uncommon. I would say at least half of my customers said it runs a whole lot better. So there's a deterioration over 122,000 miles, and when you get new plugs in it, I'm willing to bet that you'll probably say, oh, it runs and idles better, starts better, that kind of stuff. So,
okay, do you have any idea of the price on that?
Well, you got...
You got 8 spark plugs.
Yeah, so you got, you know, $300 there.
Right.
You probably got a $500-$800 bill.
And he's got the 8 boots. You're not going to pull it out.
Yeah,
it's
you got
coils over.
And insulators and all that other wonderful stuff. Yeah.
So if to put it back the way it was, and I think that's 6 liters coil over, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, no, they got the wires. They got the.
Is it wire? Okay. So,
a set of wires going on it.
Yeah. So you do the spark plugs and you make sure the boots are nice and use a little dielectric grease in the boots so the boots don't weld themselves to the spark plug, and it also seals out dust and moisture and all that kind of stuff. So, I agree with Tom. You're gonna be in the $500-$600 range, give or take $50.
My God, when I had 3 whiskers, it was a $30 job.
Well, I know, but that's when Fred Flintstone had his car.
Gasoline was 30 cents a gallon.
Yeah, gasoline was 30 cents a
gallon. It's getting there, though.
Hey, you know what? I was at a gas station when I was a junior in high school, and our gas was 27, 29, and 31. And that's when unleaded, or the middle grade, just first came out. And you could fill a Volkswagen for like $4 or less. So it was just amazing. But anyway, Jim, we think you ought to change the spark plugs. We think you'd be happier. And I think the risk, the catalytic converter failure, I think the risk is so much bigger than the what you're going to gain.
The reward.
Yeah, the reward. So anyway, thanks, Jim. Thank you very much.
Jim is next.
I'm sorry?
Jim is next.
Jim, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes, I bought my sister-in-law's 2007 Acura MDX, and the only problem she said she had was the battery kept going dead, so she looked online to see what the problem was, and it came up the Bluetooth module, so she unplugged that, and so far she hasn't had the battery go dead, so I'm assuming is that it, problem, or should I just plug it back in and see what happens with the battery?
Well, why not? Plug it back in. If the battery goes dead, unplug it.
But it runs a lot of stuff. That module makes things happen. So what happens if you put a new module
in?
Well,
is it a factory Bluetooth or is it an aftermarket Bluetooth?
I don't know.
It's a factory.
Yeah.
Okay, does it just handle Bluetooth?
I have no idea.
Okay, well, a wiring schematic can...
Yes.
Okay, you're running a risk by fixing your car based on the internet. You got people that are guessing that are that could be bakers, what did I say, bakers, candlestick makers, and all that. It's just not a good idea. We had a car in not too long ago that there was a switch at the bottom of the driver's seat that was bad, and we had a battery problem. Now, that was going to go through the airbag module because the seat, it's not going to blow the airbag unless there's a butt in the seat. So you've got some really weird electronic stuff, but I don't know. Have you checked and see how much the module is?
No, I have. I just picked it up yesterday. I haven't looked at it yet.
And in reality, we could go in there with an inductive amp probe. We could go circle each one of those wires, and then if it was the purple one, we could look at a wiring diagram and see what that purple wire actually does.
See who else is on that circuit.
That's a good way to put it. Who else is on that circuit? So, you know, and then if at the end of the day you get to spend $125, we'll see you next week.